Beings having eternal relations with that transcendental form of the Lord. We are, life after life, searching after that form of the Lord. And we are not satisfied by any other form of material appeasement. Narayana got a glimpse of this. But having not seen it again, he became perturbed and stood up all of a sudden to search it out. What we desire, life after life, was attained by Narayana. And losing sight of him again was certainly a great shock for him. Om again, Achyutanandasya, Gyananjana, Shalabhaya, Chakshurvinitam, Yena, Tasmai, Shri Gurave Namah. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Govindanam, Shri Advaita Gadara, Srivastri Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Yesterday we learned that there is no comparison between spiritual happiness and material happiness. That's an important point for us because, after all, everyone wants to be happy. And it is humiliating to know, to realize, that we don't know what is real happiness. Our pride is based on thinking we know what feels good, we know what feels nice, we know what is a good time. But Srimad Bhagavatam eradicates our misconceptions Our misconceptions are, of course, number one, thinking of the body and mind, and number two, thinking that happiness is based upon the body and mind. These are all misconceptions which need to be eradicated. We have a lot of cleansing work to do, just like proper persons, they clean their house, they clean their car, certainly they clean their bodies. So simply we have to clean the heart of misconceptions, because it is those misconceptions that are propelling us forward in the wrong way in our life. So to think that we really don't know what happiness is very liberating. Because obviously we are struggling to be happy. We are longing to be happy. And we are constantly, you can catch yourself day after day, trying to arrange your circumstances and factors of your life so that you'll be happy. And when you fail, you feel very depressed. And when you constantly fail, you feel almost hopeless. So this endeavor for happiness is so important to us. But even more important than that endeavor for happiness is the realization that we don't know what happiness is. Like little children, 3 and 4 year olds, would you expect them to know what's their self-interest? They just want to play with little toys, crawl around and be fed. You ask my dear 3 year old, what is your real self-interest? What can the child say? The unfortunate thing is that you ask an adult, and what can the adult say? There's no knowledge. Yet the adults are working so hard, studying so hard, trying for material happiness, social prestige, respect, security, stability, all these things. But actually, they're no different than little toddlers. Think about it. Both the toddler and the adult have an equal amount of self-knowledge. Think about it. Accept that. Both the toddler and the adult have not a clue of what is the ultimate goal of life, where they came from, why they're here. So you may look at the toddler as being so inexperienced, so innocent. People are attracted to little children because their innocence, their freshness. The adults have lost their innocence and freshness by activating plans for material enjoyment. There's the seed in the heart, the desire for material enjoyment. And that seed is watered by contact with material nature. So the little toddlers are not actually innocent. Oh, they're crawling around and saying, Mama, Papa. In the heart are the seeds of material enjoyment carried over from the past life. And then those seeds of material enjoyment in the heart of the toddlers are watered by contact with material nature. You can just see as the little children become accustomed to what's around them and start to realize, this world is meant for my pleasure. They see all the adults gathered around them, you know, smiling, oh, aren't you cute? They quickly realize that the purpose of life is to be the center of attraction. And that they are all attractive. So then they spend their whole life as adults. Growing the tree of material entanglement by watering the seed of material enjoyment. Material nature, as we said, is the water that makes that seed grow. Contact with material nature. Karanam guna sadhasya. Sadhasya yoni janasya. We've explained many times how contact with material nature is not an innocent thing. Reactions happen. Things happen just by your being in the material atmosphere. Just like if you're in a swimming pool. There's chlorine there, and your body will be affected according to how much chlorine is in the pool and how sensitive you are to chlorine. So it's not that you're just in the swimming pool and that's all that there is. No, things are happening. There's chlorine in the swimming pool. Or there's salt there. The pool down here, you know, has salt in the swimming pool. They use seawater. But still, there's chlorine in it. So things are happening. You think, oh, I'm just in the pool, and I'm floating, I'm swimming, I'm splashing. No, things are happening. There are reactions going on. An educated person in that department can see. So similarly, as we swim in the ocean of material nature, things happen. And the seed of material enjoyment becomes water, and the tree of material entanglement grows from that seed. So the whole purpose of the beginning aspects of Bhakti Yoga are to chop down that tree of material entanglement. But what do we think? We are clinging to that tree. We're tree huggers. Not in the environmental sense, but in the sense of hugging the tree of material enjoyment. No, no, it won't let me go. It won't let me go. This tree of material entanglement is my duty. I must do my duty. I must do my responsibility. I cannot let go of this tree of material entanglement. And while you're hugging the tree of material entanglement, you are tasting the fruits. And what is the taste of those fruits on the tree of material entanglement? Happiness and distress. Sukha dukkha. We're hoping just to taste the sukha, the material happiness. But as soon as you seek to taste the sukha, the material happiness, you must also taste the dukkha, the material distress. They come together. They're twin brothers. You can't have one without the other. There's one of those twins that share the same sack in the mother's womb. So that's what happiness and distress are like. You can't separate them. Just like twins, identical twins. You can't separate them. Even they're in different parts of the world, and they can tune in and feel that the other one is going through some crisis. Duality. Happiness and distress. This is our world that we strive for. Tasting the fruits of happiness and distress on the tree of material entanglement. So how to chop that tree down? As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Asvastam Ejam Subhigruta Mulam. You must chop down that tree at the root. You use the acts of transcendental knowledge, which allows you to become detached. And then the truth. Then the tree starts to dry up. Because it's not getting any water. You are functioning in material nature in such a way that you're using everything for Krishna's service. Therefore, the seed gets no water. Even though you're in material nature, you're situated differently. You're seeking the pleasure of Krishna's senses. So therefore the tree, both the seed and its tree, they get no water. They start to dry up. And the fruits of happiness and distress on the tree start to wither. This is the practical effect of the bhakti process. And of course, we are not all about detachment. Our detachment is based on attachment to Krishna. The more we become attached to Krishna's service, Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes, the more our grip on material nature will slacken. We'll stop hugging that tree of material entanglement. There's also the tree of love of Krishna. The seed of ecstatic love of Krishna was manifested by Madhavendra Puri. And then that seed of ecstatic love of Krishna grew into the tree of ecstatic love, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we should hug that tree. We can be tree huggers in that sense. We embrace the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who desired that wherever you go, whomever you meet, teach them the science of Krishna. so many reports about how when devotees do seek to reach out, even they may think, oh, who am I? I'm not very advanced, I'm just a neophyte. Nevertheless, if they seek to hug the tree of Sri Vedanta Mahaprabhu's mission, be a tree hunter in that sense, things happen that they could never conceive of. Just like our Radha Krishna, he was telling me yesterday how one of his relatives he just presented knowledge of bhakti to, and before he knew it, she's going around telling so many others, and they're all becoming Krishna conscious. How did this happen? I never knew that such potential was there. We'll think, oh, I'm just a neophyte devotee. I'm just trying to chant my rounds and make sure I get nice prasad. What can I do? But no. The more that we reach out to others, the more you'll see the wonders of the tree of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which grows the fruits of ecstatic love of Krishna. The fruits on Lord Chaitanya's tree are not happiness and distress. They are ecstatic love of Krishna. We are meant to be compassionate. The definition of a Vaishnava is, as you know, paradukha dukhi. The real bhakti yoga practitioner is unhappy to see the suffering of others. That's the motivating factor behind our outreach activities. Because it takes compassion to reach out to others. You wouldn't normally do that. It's like you're driving by a lake or a river and you see someone drowning. So you try to save that person. And of course, the more skill you have as a lifesaver, the more you'll accomplish your task. So we want to become expert at helping others. The feeling has to be there. The bhakti feeling is not sentiment. It's based on knowledge. Is based on fulfilling the desire of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And once you have the compassion, then you naturally want to become qualified to help others. You realize it takes skill, it takes knowledge. So you eagerly embrace all those ingredients so that you can become a successful servant of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We don't want to enjoy Krishna for ourselves. Naturally, when you first come to bhakti, you want relief from material suffering. You become tired of the stale taste of the fruits of happiness and distress. So you're looking out for yourself. I want to be happy. I couldn't be happy in materialistic pursuits. Now I shall be happy spiritually. That's all right in the beginning. But as you become more purified, you start to realize, what about Krishna's happiness? What about that happiness of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is in anxiety, in transcendental anxiety, because of the suffering of Krishna's parts and parcels lost in the illusion? Why should we care? I'm just in it for me. That is neophyte devotee. Everyone begins at a neophyte, as a neophyte, generally speaking. But we should want to make progress. Not just be locked in their own little world and not consider the sufferings of others. So there is the compassion, and then there is something, it may sound a little frightening to you, the willingness to undergo inconvenience for the sake of others making spiritual advancement. The willingness to undergo and tolerate uncomfortable situations because you know the end result will please Lord Chaitanya. Now, this is not so strange. Look at what parents go through when they have a child. The sleepless nights, the screaming. Life is never the same. But they're willing to undergo that inconvenience for what they see as a higher purpose. So many of you have gone to the university. You're working a job. There's so many inconveniences at the workplace, not the university, but you tolerate it for the purpose of getting the salary. So it's not like toleration is unknown to us. Even in relationships, what husband and wife relationship can go on without toleration? After the romance wears off, you realize we're different people. And then what? You either like what is so popular today in the material world, you just say, oh, time for a divorce, if you even got married in the first place. Or you realize we've got to work things out and pull together for a higher purpose. Those marriages that are based on Dharma, there's that higher purpose. So it's not that toleration is unknown to us. So then, what is so strange about tolerating inconvenience and giving others Krishna consciousness? That's the way to attract the attention of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The more the Panchatattva dance, the more the seed of material enjoyment becomes eradicated. It can't sprout like a fried seed. We want to assist the Panchatattva in their activities. That's our aspiration. If we're just into it for ourselves, we'll remain neophytes. Krishna, I just want to be happy. You make me happy, and that's all. Okay, there's some value to that. But this is neophyte stage. It's like children telling the parents, Mommy, Daddy, make me happy. Give me this toy. Give me that toy. So the parents experience some pleasure in fulfilling the child's desire. All right, here's this toy. Let's go to the Toys R Us. We'll get another toy. But actually, the parents are hoping that in the future, the child will help them. They're hoping that in the future the child will be concerned with the parents' happiness. So as spiritual infants, we're focused on our own happiness. Do I feel blissful today? Bhagavad Gita says, if I do devotional service, I'm blissful. So as I always say, you pull out your bliss meter and how do I feel today? Oh, no, I don't feel blissful. What's going on here? That's all right in the beginning. But we need to come out of the infancy stage. Make plans how to please Krishna. Because we are part of Krishna. By pleasing Krishna, automatically, we are pleased without even having to worry about it. That's the secret of bhakti happiness. You please Krishna, you sacrifice for Krishna, and you don't have to worry about your own happiness. This can be realized in any ashram. This is the cornerstone truth of all the ashrams. Seek to serve Krishna, seek to satisfy Krishna, automatically you'll be happy without even striving for it. You don't have to pursue happiness. You pursue Krishna's pleasure, Krishna's service. And because we are following Krishna through Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself coming as his own devotee, we recognize that the most essential service is to give Krishna to others. Even sometimes it's inconvenient. So those who want to go deeper into bhakti, they'll understand this mystery of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. the tree of love of Krishna. We'll embrace that tree of Lord Chaitanya's mission of spreading love of Krishna. And naturally, we'll let go of the tree of material entanglement. You're hearing about Narada Muni's happiness. And yesterday we discussed how spiritual feelings of happiness and intense ecstasies have no mundane comparison. The description was given by Narada Muni to Vyasadeva. Every part of my body became separately enlivened. Now what does that mean? He's talking about his senses, because in Vedic terminology, body means senses, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Indriyami Pranayama. The body is a bag of senses. So don't think of the body as separate from senses. The body means a collection of senses. So he said that each one of his senses was separately enlivened. That's what he's talking about when he says every part of my body became separately enlivened. He means his senses. The acharyas give a detailed analysis of this. Each one of his senses became unlimitedly ecstatic, overwhelming. His eyes, they were saturated with the pleasure of seeing Krishna. The ears were saturated with the pleasure of hearing Krishna. The nose was saturated with the pleasure of smelling Krishna's form. The sense of touch is saturated by experiencing the Lord's transcendental form. Each sense was on overload in transcendental happiness. We can't conceive what that's like. When you think of mundane happiness or mundane experience, there's always just one sense that's partially stimulated and partially supposedly giving you some happiness. Oh, look at that. Oh, that's so nice. Did you hear that? Ooh, smell this. But all your senses, each one of them individually on overload in transcendental ecstasy, we can't conceive of that. And the ecstasy of Narada Muni in his seeing of the Lord was so great that he lost himself in the process of seeing both himself and the Lord together. So we're getting some glimpse into life on a far higher platform. It's not theory or disbelief. You're hearing the autobiographical accounts from Narada Muni. Now in today's verse, we learn that there's an extraordinary difference between material form and spiritual form. Just as yesterday we learned that there's an extraordinary difference between material and spiritual happiness, today we're learning about form. The transcendental form of the Lord, as it is, satisfies the mind's desire, and at once erases all mental incongruities. Upon losing that form, I suddenly got up, being perturbed, as is usual when one loses that which is desirable. So now, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is teaching us about our desire to see different forms in the material world. We may not think about it, but there is a quest. Our eyes want what is called eye candy. You want to see things that bring you peace. You want to see things that promise material fulfillment. Then you become enlivened. In so-called civilization today, it is the sense, it is the eyes that are most prominent. That's why people say, seeing is believing. Whereas in Vedic culture, it's the ear that is most prominent. Because if you don't have proper knowledge that comes through the ear, you won't recognize what you're seeing. So in Vedic culture, hearing is believing. In fact, hearing is more than believing. Hearing is experiencing. So people, they have a hard time understanding that. How can this process of hearing Bhagavatam give you anything more than religious belief? How can it be that hearing the Bhagavatam gives you spiritual experience? I can't understand that. By hearing about Krishna, you are vaccinated against delusion and you make advancement in your spiritual life. You actually experience the realities just by hearing. But the so-called civilization today emphasizes seeing. Why? Because they're so lusty with their vision. They always want to see things that promise material enjoyment. Unconsciously, as explained this purport, they're looking for relief. I hope I'll see something. They don't understand this at depth, but this is going on. I hope I see something that will satisfy my mind. I hope I'll see something that will eradicate all the anxieties in my life. Click, I'm going to the TV. Let me see on the television things that will relieve my anxieties from working all day, from undergoing the stresses of material existence. Let me go to the movies. Let me see the big screen. The big screen will take away all the problems of my mind. I'll lose myself in the big screen. Whether it's Hollywood, Bollywood, or a combination of both these days. So unconsciously, we are seeking to see forms that satisfy the mind. It doesn't happen, though. No material form is capable of giving us the peace we want through our eyesight, that sense. The transcendental form of the Lord, however, has nothing to do with the material energy. When you come before the deity and just stare, I've explained before how the Archivirama, they're the only persons you can stare at, they'll never feel uncomfortable. Go up to anyone else and stare at them. But you can come before the Archivigraha and just stare and stare and stare. You don't have to go away. There's no social pressure. You've been there too long staring at Sri Radhabal. You can just stand and stare. Look and look and look, and you'll feel that peace in your mind. You'll feel that satisfaction. And you'll be protected against staring at material nature in order to get peace. Now that we lost sight of this form, and it was a great shock for him, we will speak in the coming days about the significance of the Lord's disappearance from Narada Muni and why the Lord does this. Is the Lord cruel, or is he most expert in loving reciprocation? So we'll be discussing that in the coming days. Are there any questions? Yes.
One comment, Maharaj, about this. Twin in the womb of the mother. When they come out, even the medical scientists, they have tried to separate them. Happiness and distress, of mundane happiness and distress. And they don't survive even after 18 hours, 24 hours of mission. You are separating the twins from each other. And they are still not able to be. So happiness and distress will have already there.
Yes. It's giving you product of his many years of experience, as well as the Shastra, right?
And also, Prabhupada's mission is the same, it's what you're describing. To give Krishna to others, that is Prabhupada's mission.
Why should we care for others? Here we are at the temple, we have our own life. Why should we care for others? Think about it. Who are they anyway? It's crazy people. Take so much effort to speak to them. They don't listen. Their minds are wild. If they're from around here, you know, their minds are wild. If they're from India, the minds are wild, but outside it's a very nice, well-mannered covering. They come in, everyone is mad. It's just the madness manifests sometimes in a cultured way, a traditional way. And sometimes just with freestyle madness. No culture, no tradition. It's all madness. The bottom line is the same. So the dedicated servant of Lord Chaitanya has to be like a psychiatrist dealing with so much madness of different types and flavors. The well-mannered madness and the freestyle madness. Who will help take up this burden? Lord Chaitanya is asking that question in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. I cannot distribute all these fruits of love of Krishna alone. Who will help me? Of course, Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He doesn't need any help. But he wants that you share in this most blessed service. Who will help me? I'm just a solitary gardener. What am I going to do with all these fruits? Anything else? Yes.
What makes people, devotees, lose desire to preach? Sometimes we see cases devotees start to preach and after some time their desire wears down and they just stop preaching.
Number one can be lack of appreciation. If you outreach to someone and then later they don't appreciate, they never express any gratitude, you can become affected by that. I put all this effort to helping this person, now this person acts like I don't exist. It's like parents dealing with children who the children don't care for the parents. They just callous and don't even notice all the sacrifice the parents made. Sometimes the parents have to tell the child, do you realize all that your father and I are doing for you and how we sacrifice for you? We try our best for you. In the West, during the 60s, a big countercultural revolution, this is what happened. So many kids, they just signed in mass, millions of them, we're not trusting our parents. Our parents brought about so many wars, such an exploitative society. We're not listening to our parents. So they had that mantra, never trust anyone over 30. They didn't realize that one day they would be over 30. So when there's no appreciation shown, you can become discouraged. And even worse, if the person even starts to criticize you, you get so discouraged. You start saying, what's the use of this? I'm not caring for anyone anymore. That can also happen in the temple community. Devotees, they try to do some sacrificial service, especially service of management and organizing others. Oh, look out. Who are you to tell me what to do, Prabhu? You're just fanatical. So then such devotees who have taken up these positions of responsibility, they feel discouraged. And then they start making vows. I'll never do this again. I'm just minding my own business. I'm never taking up any responsibility for Krishna. This is a great victory for Maya. You just see Maya Devi just rubbing her hands. Great! Another one off the playing field. The team is getting smaller and smaller. What is it? You have some sport in Australia that if the player is injured or the player, you just have to go on without with a reduced number on the team. There's some, yeah, maybe it's Aussie rules or something like that. So it's a great victory for Maya when devotees become discouraged about outreach or even managing other devotees. That's why I always say, if there's anyone who's helped you in your spiritual life, always remind that person, never let that demonic forget. Decade after decade, 30, 40 years, always remind that devotee. And that encourages the devotee, and it increases the ocean of outreach. Because that devotee will think, I was appreciated for something I did 30 years ago. Let me increase my efforts to help others. So this is the number one reason I've noticed why devotees, they drop their outreach, because there's no appreciation. And even worse, someone, you know, turned on me, who I did so much for. And then another reason is just they become lost in the bodily conception again. I just want to look after my body and my senses. I neglected my body and my senses. Good association is so important. Otherwise, yes, outreach can be a very lonely and demanding affair. But the more that do this together, many hands make light work. But if we just say, oh, the outreach is for those specialists, whether it's book distribution or urban outreach, that's for the specialists. They are the sacrificial lambs who are carrying, you know, all of us on their backs. Let them go. Get TGI. Preach. Distribute books. Go on. They will crucify themselves and we will all be saved. Go on, yes. Book distribution, Kijai. Yes, go on. University preaching. Oh, God. You know, it's in the middle of the day. I don't have time for that. Evening programs. Oh, just come home from work. I'm tired. I'm going to watch TV. Have your bhakti ritual, whatever you want to call it. Kijan, all glories. Rabbi Kijan. So we have this conception that, you know, there are a few persons who are carrying the mission for everyone. Let them go, let them do it. And because they're doing it, we don't have to do it, you see? They are the ones who are being crucified to save everyone. But actually, the more that everyone participates in these activities and does even a little bit, the more enlivened the whole community is. So outreach is not an activity of specialists. It just turns out to be that way because some have this idea that let them do it. Yes, they are the ones. We'll all glories. Just don't ask me to do anything. By this attitude, we miss out on all that Lord Chaitanya has in store for us. And then, because we remain neophytes with this attitude, it's very easy for us to go back into the bhakti conception. Even older devotees, if they stop preaching, they fall into danger. Even sannyasis, if they stop preaching, they fall into danger. The purpose of sannyas is to free the devotee up from ordinary responsibilities so that the devotee can have the responsibility to help everyone rather than just a limited family. So if the sannyasi stops preaching and doing outreach, then their spiritual happiness starts to dry up. If our spiritual society stops outreach, it'll dry up. Prabhupada said that so many times. And the deity worship will become a burden. Oh, who's going to cook the offering today? There's no one around to do the dressing of the deities. Why do we have so many deities here? This is the attitude that creeps in when there's no more enthusiasm. And the enthusiasm comes from hearing about Krishna together, chanting about Krishna together, and giving Krishna to others. So if you want to see your community increase in enlightenment, then everyone should share in Lord Chaitanya's mission directly, at least according to your capacity, according to your situation. Some persons may have more time to dedicate so many hours, so many days, weeks, months, years to outreach. But everyone has some time. But here's the way it usually works. Look, I only have 2 hours to spare a week. What will that really do? What? If I give to outreach activities, come on, it's like a drop of water compared to the ocean. It's just not even worth my endeavor, you know? It's just a few hours. This is how we trick ourselves. But then, what happens at home? You turn on the TV for a few hours. Well, you know, looking to see some forms that give relief. If we spend a few hours somewhere or other participating in outreach, I've heard so many stories of devotees who are cooking for programs, they're trying to assist in Lord Chaitanya's mission. That is the standard. They may say, well, what does it matter, my cooking one time a week for a program, for an outreach program, for a university program, what's the big deal? I mean, it's just one thing. It's not so significant. But it's very significant. Everything is significant that's done for Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan mission. Sankirtan means the congregational glorification of Krishna through Harinam, Prasad distribution, book distribution. Any other questions? Yes.
Another point of what you said was hearing is more important than seeing. That Rukmini Devi, by hearing, Rukmini Devi developed so much love.
Yes. She heard about Krishna's qualities and then in her heart decided, he's the only one for me. Of course, that's Krishna's eternal concert. But nevertheless, in the Leela, just by hearing about Krishna, she became attracted and she wrote that letter, come kidnap me. If I cannot obtain you in this life, I will perform severe austerities for hundreds of births till I can attain you. Has any wife here told that to her husband? Have you heard? If I cannot attain you in this lifetime, I will perform severe austerities for hundreds of births till I attain my goal. So this is reality, the spiritual reality. Yes. Servant of Lord Chaitanya. I was also shy when I started my outreach for Lord Chaitanya almost 40 years ago now. I was also shy. You don't believe that now, but I was. I'll confess, sometimes I would go out on Sankirtan, I would cry. I hated it, but I was determined to love it. So both emotions were there simultaneously because I wanted to please Srila Prabhupada. So that's one form of Sankirtan. It's the most important form, but there's also Harinam Sankirtan, university outreach, urban outreach. You have the bhakti riches. You have so many activities that you can plug into. Of course, there's no doubt that the book distribution, Srila Prabhupada said, is the most dear to him. And there are times of the year when it's nice that everyone joins in for that activity. So you understand your identity as a servant of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You're not a marketer in the mundane sense. What's wrong with marketing for Krishna? You see, in the business world, they'll tell you marketing means liar. You are trying to convince people that this product has value and that they must have it. You know it's not true. You know they can get by without it. But your business can't approach things that way. No. You must have this. You need this. You are missing this. And if you get this, your life will be so satisfactory. That's marketing. So it's based on a lie. The better liar you are, the better marketer you are. You don't have any marketing people in place. Well, I'll tell you, it's true. You will not get a job in marketing if you say, I want to be a marketer, and I just want to tell the truth. Maybe you don't hire you. You have to create a fiction. You have to write a novel. Create a dream. This product will do everything for you. So, marketing Krishna, that is the highest truth. So we're not ashamed to market for Krishna. And so if someone says to you on the street, oh, you're just marketing. Say, yes, this is true. But the product is the best. It's for Vino. There's no product like this. You can say that with complete honesty. Lord Caitanya is looking for those who will market on his behalf. Who will distribute the fruits of love of Krishna. Marketing means to create an interest in a product where there is none. And Srila Prabhupada said that's actually the definition of management. Management means to create an interest in Krishna where there is none. We see that in our outreach activities, whether the urban outreach, the outreach to the overseas students from India, the young professionals from India. We see how Nijananda Priya and his crew and others, they are creating an interest where there is none. Otherwise, if you just sit back, oh, they are from India, they know everything, or they've heard it all from their grandmothers and they don't want it now. But no, they are devising strategies. Similarly, you have your bhakti rishis to attract families to become part of the bhakti community. Jagannath Ram and others, they're doing like that. And you have the urban yoga seeking to show the local population bhakti is not some alien culture that is so far from them. Trying to make it accessible. The mission statement that our outreach centers in New Zealand have, Raj Krishna ESC in Auckland and Wellington, the mission statement is we make it easy. We make it easy, number one, for people to approach bhakti. Number two, for them to organically grow in bhakti. And number three, for them to distribute bhakti to others. We make it easy. See, every company has to have a mission statement. Like I think Sadananda Krishna, who's in Adelaide now with his father, Adipurush Krishna. So Sadananda Krishna, he's working for HP now. So I asked him, so what's the mantra, what's the mission statement for HP? And he said, take all the time you want, but do it right. They're IT people, they're IT engineers. They can take any amount of reasonable time to get the job done, but when it's done, it's perfect. That's their company ethic. So similarly, we have our ethic. We make it easy to come to bhakti. All right, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.